from the high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's prolific time zones, however many they may be. All of them covered quite thoroughly, one way or the other, by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, reminding you that life is not a journey to the grave with the intention of arriving safely in a pretty and well-preserved body, but rather to skid in broadside, thoroughly used up, totally worn out, loudly proclaiming, "Wow, what a ride!" Right? We don't know who said that, but it just seems to fit ever so well. How many of you saw the debates? Raise your hands. Oh, that's pretty good. Well, actually, not that good, according to the surveys done by Nielsen or, you know, whoever rates that kind of thing. But debates we did have, if you call them that. And so I'm going to talk all about that for a reason that will be incredibly obvious in a moment. First, though, I want to wish my wife, my beautiful wife, Ramona, happy birthday, hon. It's her birthday today, and a special day, and she's got some family visiting, and just pretty cool. Cool day. Lovely wife of now many years. The webcam photograph up there tonight is an interesting one. You remember, or maybe you don't, ABC was here, ABC Network Television, and they came back. They came back for a second visit in more high-definition photography. This was pretty cool, actually. They went out, if you can imagine this, the ABC crew went out into the field up adjacent from my house and, you know, photographed the house for a special reason, actually for the opening of this ABC documentary. It should be really cool. I can't divulge just how cool it'll be, they've told me, but it's going to be a special on UFOs coming up in either February or March. They're about to get their air date. And so I snuck around the long way, went up into the field, about an eighth of a mile from my house, actually, and took a photograph of them taking a photograph of my house. And so that's up on the webcam. That happened on Thursday. So that kept us busy for a while. Anytime they're around, they're quite a group, let me tell you. Anyway, don't forget about that special. I can't remind you of exactly when it is. Sometime in February or March. Be a two-hour special with Peter Jennings on UFOs. A serious look at ufology. And I must say, they've done a wonderful job. They've shot about 90 hours of video so far in high definition. And it should be serious and real. So this is one you're going to want to catch when it comes around. Now the debates. How many of you saw the debates? Well, of those of you that did, I wonder if you share with me the thought that, my God, they were scripted. Holy smokes. I've never seen anything like it in my life. There was just literally no interaction. And, of course, this is because it was choreographed in sort of a collective bargaining session between the right and the left, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans, about what they could and couldn't do, and they couldn't do most things. So I guess you'll call them debates if you wish. Whatever happened to the League of Women Voters, anyway? Didn't they used to set that up? Since I was a child, I remember that, the League of Women Voters. And now somehow it's passed from their hands into the hands of the respective political parties, which don't have a whole lot of interest in anything really spirited. Not either one of them. They want to keep any possibility of a goof to a minimum for each candidate, and that results in pure pap, as far as I'm concerned. And then there was the audience. Did anybody out here notice that the audience, they must have scared the holy hell out of those people? Because there wasn't so much as a chuckle, a groan, a cough. Even the people who were asking the questions looked scared to death. I wonder if they had them in for psychological observation or something, you know, about whether they might go crazy and ask a real question. Something like that. You know, make sure that they weren't the type of person prone to, you know, going off on their own and and asking something unscripted. God forbid something unscripted should have happened in the debates. Anyway, my candidate, I'm a libertarian, in case you didn't know. I'm official member of the Libertarian Party, have been for, I don't know, 12 years or something. My candidate, well, he was there. He was at the debates. The trouble is, though, that my candidate got arrested. Michael Bednarik got arrested. He went to the debates and he got arrested. And so, in a moment, if, you know, he's on his way from some kind of function, you know, trying to get to a telephone. So in a moment, if I can raise him, no guarantees of that, but if I can raise him, we're going to get him here on the air and we're going to talk a little bit about, well, why he ends up in handcuffs while the, well, if you want to call it debate, goes on inside. Well, this is a very interesting situation. I'm actually trying to get the hotel on the phone right now. Well, hello there. This is a radio broadcast, and I need to get hold of room 4220, please. 4220. We'll just let that go out. We don't even know what hotel it is here, so. All right. Michael, hold on a moment, please. All right. We're going to do this. Hallelujah. Michael, literally... just walked through the door. Michael Bednarik, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Your room number actually got on the air. They don't know what hotel you're in, so I guess you're safe, but it got on the air because I was literally calling you as I came back on the air here. So, you know, you're my candidate. I'm a libertarian, you know that.
I do.
And you went to the debates, and you got arrested!
I did.
All right. Well, go ahead, just sort of lay it out for me. How did this happen?
Well, we have a lawsuit that we filed in Arizona, basically challenging the fact that they're using public money and public college and keeping the libertarians out. And what we were trying to do was to serve the committee with papers to basically inform them of that, basically... acting as a process server, and we were attempting to serve those papers in St. Louis during the debate, and it was a pre-planned event, and we knew that we were going to, you know, have a little bit of resistance as we crossed the line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we did so, you know, non-violently and non-threateningly, and they, you know, promptly handcuffed us and took us into custody.
Oh, they handcuffed you?
Absolutely.
So this was a full downtown arrest. Did they know, they were aware, weren't they, who they were cuffing?
Well, they were eventually, and it should have caused them some suspicion when they had five or six different television cameras there. I was, you know, catching a small suntan there late at night with all the lights and cameras.
Yeah, I'm sure. So you were arrested, for what should I assume, trespassing?
Trespassing was added. The original charge was, resisting the, reasonable, instructions of a police officer or something like that.
Huh. So it's like you walked across a line, I take it. They had a, what?
They did. They had, a phalanx of, you know, riot gear there. And police officers, and who were moderately hostile, to say the least. I wanted to make sure that I didn't do anything that might be misconstrued as a threatening gesture. And eventually they just opened up the ranks and let me walk through, and then they put the handcuffs on. David Cobb was also there. He's the presidential candidate for the Green Party.
For the Green Party, yeah.
And the two of us were doing this together. In fact... based on the way this was all being rehearsed with the police and the sheriff ahead of time, I suspect this was going to be kind of some remote corner away from, you know, all of the, you know, pomp and circumstance. and that it would be just kind of a ritual. You know, they would shake their finger at us and tell us not to cross the line, and we would, you know, stick out our tongues and do it anyway.
Mm.
And when it finally came down to it, we were actually confronted by the riot police there.
The riot police. Michael, though the Libertarian, though our party is a, you know, it's not as big as the Republican or the Democrat party, it is a party of significance. I doubt you could talk to any American who would not have heard of the Libertarian Party. So it's not insignificant. And from that point of view, to be arresting its candidate for the presidency at a so-called debate is a little ludicrous, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's a whole lot ludicrous.
Yeah.
And as David Cobb and I were eventually handcuffed and put into the police van, the officers were asking us questions. And there were a couple of officers who didn't know. And one police officer said, "Which one of you is a presidential candidate?" I said, "We're both presidential candidates." And I said, "Isn't it a little bit odd that you have two presidential candidates that you're
in cuffs, yeah,
at a presidential debate?"
God. How did the police officer respond?
Well, again, the members who were in riot gear with the shields and the batons, they're a hostile and aggressive group. I mean, they are looking for trouble.
Mm.
However, once I was permitted to cross through the lines, the people behind the lines, the regular police officers, were very respectful. They understood that this was a political gesture, and that, you know, David and I, you know, posed zero, you know, physical threat to anyone.
Now, you said they added a charge. That means they considered, even when they knew who you were, and then bumped it up a level?
Yes, they did.
Oh, my, my.
That was the trespassing. You know, originally it was refusing to obey a reasonable order.
Instruction.
From a police officer. And then later they added the
trespassing. So where does it, out of curiosity, before I've got a million other questions, but where does it go from here? I mean, do you end up going to court on this?
I could if I choose.
I would if I were you. I'd definitely go to court. Okay.
And it's going to be here in St. Louis, and you know, it will depend. I don't know what I'm going to be doing in December. And so, you know, the cost of traveling to St. Louis, it'll be more of a practical matter of whether I feel that I want to pursue that for more publicity or not.
Well, yes, but if you don't go, then every time you go, you know, to Missouri, you're going to have to be looking over your shoulder.
Well, I'm really not that concerned about it. if I was concerned about having my name on a police blotter, I wouldn't have chosen to do the civil disobedience. And I'm, you know, if I had been around, you know, in early Boston, I'd have been there helping them throw tea overboard into the harbor.
Well, before you got here, you know, I was just killing time. I was talking to the audience about the debates themselves. Now, I understand you saw the first and quite obviously not the second, unless somebody had the...
Yeah, there was no TV inside the police van.
No, I wouldn't have thought. And nobody taped it for you.
I'm sure that someone has taped it, but I was up 3 hours later. We've been traveling quite a bit today.
Well, let me tell you, as far as debates go, it was somewhat more entertaining than the first one, but no less scripted. And when I say scripted, for example, Michael, I listened to the audience, and all I can think of is that somebody there threatened these people with the death of their relatives if they would laugh or make any noise whatsoever. I've never heard a peep out of the audience during both debates. Not a peep. And so, you know, that's just sort of part of it. I mean, they were so scripted. I mean, this time, I was asking the audience sort of rhetorically, you know, what the hell happened to the League of Women Voters that used to run these things? And now, what, both parties got control of it and they decide how it's going to go?
That's correct. That's correct. And that was what the point of our
happen?
Lawsuit in Arizona was, that they're using taxpayer money. They're using a publicly funded college. And, you know, this whole thing is basically an infomercial. I'm not sure why they still go through the, you know, the pomp of actually having one. Apparently, there are still some people in the United States who believe that it actually means something.
Well, I think even a majority of them, no doubt, but I wonder how many of the people in the U.S. really just were annoyed with the way it was planned.
Yes.
Planned.
Well, I like to point out that Henry Ford once said that you can have your car painted any color you want as long as it's black, which is not a legitimate choice. Now the Democrats and Republicans are trying to convince us that you can have any president you want as long as it's Bush or Kerry.
Yeah.
And that is also not a legitimate choice.
It doesn't seem like. I mean, what's the basis then of your lawsuit? You're saying that because public money was used, it's what, state money?
Yes. I mean, they were using a, it's going to be at the University of Arizona, and it is a, which is a public college, government-funded college, and that... I mean, I haven't had the time to actually read the lawsuit.
I would think just basically that if public money is involved, then it's not any sort of private affair at all.
Right.
But let me ask you something. Do you get Secret Service protection? I mean, you're a very legitimate candidate for the presidency of the United States. Do they afford you Secret Service protection?
No.
No.
Not at all.
No. Why not? And to what level do you have to rise to be protected?
I don't know the answer to that right now. And I'm certainly curious to know if that and when that's going to happen. But I've had libertarians at certain functions who were providing protection for me.
Well, homegrown, I've, you know.
Yeah.
But still.
But I don't legitimately feel that I'm in any kind of a threat because I haven't violated anybody's rights.
Well, listen, a lot of people who thought they were not under threat, you know, just because your name's out there, you can, believe me, you can be under threat. Look at the John Lennons and all the rest of that. So can happen. But some protection is better than none. On how many states' ballots would your name be?
The Libertarian Party will be on 48 states.
Oh my
and
God.
Washington, D.C.
Oh my God.
Yes, 48? we are a significant political force.
I should say, 48 states, your name's going to be on the ballot. You should have Secret Service protection. You should be involved in the debates. God knows, they might have been interesting.
Well, I would have won those debates because the Libertarian platform is based on the Constitution, individual rights, and private property, whereas the Democrats and Republicans have platforms which are utterly indefensible.
All right. Obviously, you've made several approaches that, or your people have, that to the powers that be with regard to getting included in the debates. And what do they say? What do they say?
The Democrats and Republicans have not responded at all.
Not even an answer?
No. When we have invited them to our debates, we have sent those invitations certified or maybe registered, but we've gotten some physical evidence back that they have received the invitations, but they haven't even deigned to call us to acknowledge they've gotten. You know, they haven't even taken the time to make up an excuse that they're busy washing their hair.
All right. So I suppose when you get the no, then you go to the media, don't you? I mean, you go to the media and say, look, I'm on the ballot in 48 states in Washington, D.C., for God's sakes. I ought to be part of the debates.
I have been challenging George Bush and John Kerry to the debates for the last 3 months. Every time I've had an opportunity, either on television or on radio, and even in print, I formally challenge them, you know, based on one of two possibilities. Either, you know, I am a, you know, small, insignificant third party, and, you know, I couldn't possibly be any trouble to them, and they should allow me in just, you know, based on freedom of speech. Or possibly they are terrified that the Libertarian platform would resonate with Americans and that a significant percentage of people would vote Libertarian and thus, you know, crush the stranglehold that the Democrats and Republicans currently have on America.
Yes. Well, I'm going for the latter offering. I'm absolutely certain that is the case because it would have been a real debate, actually.
It would have been a real debate.
I mean, even if in the end one of those two were to be elected, if you and perhaps a couple of others How many states does the Green Party have?
37, I believe.
Well, that's legit too, then.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Any candidate who is on the ballot in enough states to mathematically achieve the White House, even potentially, deserves an automatic slot at the presidential debate.
This is absolutely incredible. I mean, to me, it's absolute arrested, for God's sakes. Hold on, Michael. We're going to take the bottom of the hour break. Michael Bednarik, who is the Libertarian Party candidate for the presidency of the United States. I guess he just got bailed out, so that's how he's able to be with us tonight, because he got arrested. He got arrested at the debates. Arrested at the debates. From the high desert in the middle of the night, this is Coast to Coast.
Want to time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com. With Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
And this hour, my guest is Michael Bednarik. He is the Libertarian Party's candidate for the office of the presidency of the United States. And he went to the debates. You didn't miss anything if you saw the debates. He didn't get to take part in them. In fact, actually, when he got there, he was arrested, slammed in handcuffs, and, I don't know, carted away to wherever it is he went. We'll ask about that in a moment. Stay right where you are. It would be absolute political heresy to have somebody in there who might present ideas and questions that could capture the imagination and the fire of the American public. And so instead of allowing such, why, they arrested this candidate. 48 states, he's on the ballot in 48 states in Washington and Washington, D.C., and they arrested him. Did they take you to a police station or what?
Absolutely. We were put into a van. Handcuffed and put into a van, and they were getting ready to transport us to the police station when five college students were, you know, walking home, and the same way they go home every other time, and didn't realize that they had stumbled into a zone. And so they arrested, three young men and two young ladies.
Wow.
And so we were there for about an additional hour and a half. So it was from 8 o'clock when we crossed the line, and they finally released us back onto the street at 12:01, just after midnight.
12:01. By then, of course, they were well aware of who they had in custody.
Oh, sure. I mean, we were advertising who we were.
Uh-huh.
And I've just been told that a copy of the lawsuit that we have filed is posted on our website now. So if anybody wants to go out and review that document.
And that website would be?
That website would be badnarik.org.
That's
D as in boy, A, D as in dog, N-A-R-I-K.
One more time.
Badnarik is BADNARIK.ORG.
All right. So a lot of people, no doubt. So the lawsuit is there. That'll be interesting reading. You know, it does seem like you've got kind of a reasonable appeal to my ears in that lawsuit. I mean, what do your lawyers tell you? How much of a chance of success do you have? What are you trying to do? Stop the debates unless you're in, or what?
Well, we would preferably like to be. Would like to participate.
Understood.
I mean, if I could participate in a debate against George Bush and John Kerry, you could take my birthday and Christmas the rest of my life, because I would be able to die a happy man. However, realistically, we anticipate that George Bush and or John Kerry would refuse to participate in the debate.
Absolutely.
Rather than allow me to
be happy.
Unsettled. Yeah, rather than give me that little Christmas present, they would... They would probably cancel the debates. However, we would also be happy with the publicity of that. You know, I would be walking around proudly bragging that George Bush and John Kerry were afraid of me.
Oh, well, you might get that. I mean, if they actually are forced into either, you know, including you or canceling the debate, and they have to cancel the debate, then you'd get plenty of press, wouldn't you?
I certainly hope so.
Uh-huh. All right, well, since you didn't see the second debate, it was not all that much different than the first. The president did a little bit better, didn't grimace as much. And anyway, you know, they were split between Iraq and domestic policy. Iraq was a big part of both of these debates, if you want to call them that.
Yeah.
So had you been there? And you'd been able to be a part of the sparring on Iraq, what would you have interjected?
Well, George Bush has actually confessed that we can't win that war, though it was an accidental confession, of course. And
you mean when he said that the war on terrorism is not winnable?
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
And I believe he did that in an interview on the Today Show. And the reports are all now showing and concluding that Iraq never had any weapons of mass destruction. They had gotten rid of them back in 1991, and so that the premise we were given for going there in the first place was, you know, basically in error. And I would also point out that staying in Iraq increases our probability of another terrorist attack. 92% of the people in Iraq consider us occupiers rather than liberators.
I wonder why Senator Kerry didn't bring that up.
Well, I suspect that it's because Senator Kerry has intentions of continuing the war.
Well, he does. He has his own plan and says that if he's elected, why, it'll all happen faster, and then we'll get home faster. And that's sort of a nutshell his
right.
presentation. Train well, more Iraqis.
If anybody is interested, the libertarian presidential candidate, namely me, would bring our sons and daughters home as safely and quickly as possible. And that way we could eliminate any additional American fatalities.
Earlier today, I saw a projection of 10 years before we can be out of Iraq. If you were the president, how long would it be, do you think?
It's difficult, but somewhere I would think between 3 to 6 months. And again, the key is safely and quickly as possible. The laws of physics prohibit us from bringing them home in 48 hours.
Yes, indeed.
We've just got too many people and too much equipment there. So it's going to take some finite thing, and I'm smart enough to recognize that when you're starting to retreat, that's an opportunity for the enemy to take pot shots at you. And so my priority would be to bring everyone home alive. If I had to keep our troops there for an additional 4 weeks to make sure that, you know, everyone came home, you know, standing on their feet, then I would do that. But failing that that safety requirement as quickly as possible.
Michael, let's go back to the basics. I mean, the reason for the war was weapons of mass destruction. Everybody, even the president now, seems to agree there weren't any. So the rationale for the war had to change. And I'm not sure exactly what it is right now. I think maybe freeing the Iraqi people from the ruthless dictator Saddam Hussein is the biggest one. Why are we there?
I don't know why we're there. I certainly don't see any valid reason for us to be there.
Nobody ever mentioned the word oil, Michael. I never heard that.
Well, and I may have personal opinions as to why we might be there, but I would never be pretentious enough to, you know, project ideas or words into, you know, other people's mouths.
Yeah.
But clearly, they are not a clear and present danger to us. In fact, I don't know any country around the world which is an imminent danger to the United States. And I think that we ought to have an exit strategy for Germany, Japan, and Korea. We've been, you know, those wars have been over for over 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
The Constitution allows us to do national defense. It does not give us the authority to do international offense. And
That's an awfully good point. It really doesn't, does it?
Bring our troops home from 135 countries around the world.
Mm-hmm. So you would withdraw the majority of American foreign-based troops?
Yes. I mean,
wow.
It's not our job to be doing national defense for other people. I mean, Germany and Japan, you know, their economies should be sufficiently strong now after World War II that, you know, they should be doing their own national defense. And, you know, if these countries are, you know, doing trade back and forth with each other and they're not threatening each other, then you don't need a lot of national defense.
Well, to a lot of us out here, once there was no apparent clear and present danger, they did make the point that there was no connection to 9/11. And so then there isn't any clear and present danger. And so, the reason for this whole war, I mean, American men and women dying, it seems so unclear to me and so important that we have a reason to risk our young people's lives. And I didn't see it before the war, and I don't see it now, unless there's an unstated reason that you could think of.
Well, if you're going to go to war, it's not acceptable to have an unstated reason. And Congress has an obligation under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11 to state that reason and declare the war.
Oh, yeah, there's that, too.
Oh, by the way. You know, I don't know why we bother to have the Constitution if we're not going to follow the rules. Why have a moral compass if you're going to find other reasons to stray off of the path?
All right. Here was a big one in both of the debates. How would Michael Bednarik, were he to become president, what would you do with regard to terrorism? Now, 9/11, of course, was painfully very real, and so there are people who wish to, you know, kill us. And that would be a legitimate defense, certainly, but I wonder how you'd handle it. Have you given that any thought?
Excuse me.
I'm sure you've been doing a lot of talking.
Yeah. We have to realize that, you know, most of these people hate us because we're there bombing buildings and, you know, killing innocent civilians. I mean, it's not because, you know, they're, you know, jealous of our, you know, wealth and freedoms. I mean, that's a ridiculous statement. If you have a hornet's nest on your property, there is always a small but finite chance that, you know, you'll be stung by a hornet. On the other hand, if you go out with a baseball bat and you start beating on this hornet's nest in an effort to kill hornets, is your chance of being stung going to increase or decrease?
Well, let me turn that around on you a little bit. If I had a hornet's nest and they did sting the hell out of me, I'd burn them alive or whatever.
Right.
And so, you know, we do have to respond to people who knock down our buildings and kill thousands of people. You have to respond to that.
And libertarians are not pacifists. I mean, we're the ones that promote the Second Amendment and say that you should be able to walk around carrying a gun either openly or concealed.
That's right.
So to assume that we are pacifists and we would not do our self-defense internationally is ridiculous. But we need to do so ethically. We have every authority and every justification of going after the people who have perpetrated the attack. Now, September 11th, to the best of my knowledge, was done by Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda.
That's right.
And we should be, you know, focusing our attentions on those people, and yet we still haven't brought them to justice. Now, I understand that Al-Qaeda is a little bit slippery. They don't have any, you know, defined territory, and they kind of move around. Well, I understand that's difficult, but just because they don't have a defined territory does not authorize us to go to Iraq just because Iraq does have a border.
Well, here's one of the things that's puzzling me, and I bet a lot of people out there. I mean, we did, even if we didn't have just cause to do it, no question, Saddam Hussein was a really bad guy. He did torture people, gas people, and we know all that stuff. So he was a bad guy. And so even without, as far as you and I are concerned, just cause to go into Iraq, we did, and we, in quotes, freed the Iraqi people. And now it's like there have not been roses and thank yous in the street. Mostly they've been, you know, killing us. It's not the response, the grateful thank you response.
Yeah, it wasn't the same response the French gave us when the American troops came in World War II.
Not even close.
And so, I mean, this has to make, you know, Americans think. I mean, certainly. In fact, I heard a quote. I can't verify it, but I was told that, you know, there are Iraqis who are now saying that they were better off under Saddam Hussein, as bad as he was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if you don't have electricity or something, maybe you do feel that way, but it's really just nasty over there. I mean, nasty, nasty, nasty. Even the UN's afraid to be there. It's just a very hostile place that we are now occupying, and we might have to do it, I hear, for 10 years. So,
and we're not doing a very good job of it. We have almost no control of Fallujah, and even Baghdad, which is supposed to be the capital city, is not clearly in American hands. So, I mean, really, the only other choice that we would have would be to go in there with far more troops, kill everybody in Iraq, and that way we could safely say that nobody in Iraq hates us anymore.
Oh, right. Nobody's there. And then Senator Kerry, I think, brought up to the president a couple of times that we had, you know, we had Osama bin Laden trapped, and then we turned the job over to militias in Afghanistan, and we never got him. And so you'd concentrate your efforts there on getting Osama and those around him.
Well, absolutely. Those are the people who perpetrated the crime, and if they are guilty, we should bring them to justice and make them pay for it. You know, put them in jail so that they, you know, are no longer a threat. But, I mean, to put this on a more personal level, if your brother punches me in the nose, that doesn't give me the right to come and give you a fat lip.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
speaking of that, neighboring fat lips, there's Iran and there's North Korea. Now, while we went after this country and now occupy it at a high cost, which didn't have weapons of mass destruction, Iran is well on the way. I think North Korea is now said to have maybe 6 or 7 atomic bombs, Michael. What's your expectation? Do you think that the United States, as represented by either one of the political parties, is going to go after these nations soon and next?
I don't have enough political savvy to know what the Democrats and Republicans are going to do. And I do recognize that there are other countries out there that have nuclear weapons, and it's not possible. It's not possible to prevent them from getting nuclear weapons. The only thing that we can do is to proceed with a foreign policy that's not going to trigger them into using it on us.
Which, in your estimation, would be one of disengagement.
Absolutely. Yeah. Non-interventionism, as libertarians prefer to call it. We want to follow the advice that George Washington gave us during his farewell address when he said that we should have economic ties with all countries and entangling alliances with none. Mm-hmm. In other words, we should, you know, open up our markets to other countries, sell them goods, which is going to improve our economy. It's going to raise their standard of living. And when we're giving them food and cell phones, they're going to be far less likely to blow up our buildings.
Mm-hmm. I think I agree with you. Now, the other half of the debate, we have so little time, was basically on domestic policy. And there were criticisms from the Kerry camp of, you know, current economic policy and the size of the current deficit and debt that we have as a nation. I mean, we were pretty well debt-free here not very many years ago. Now, all of a sudden, oh, my God, it's trillions of dollars.
Yes. And, I mean, every one of us, and in fact, even our young people, when they move away from home and get their own apartment, one of the first rules they learn is that you can't spend more money than you make. you know how much money you've got coming in, and you write a budget, meaning you pay for the rent, your phone calls, and, you know, other necessities, and then, you know, whatever you have left over, you can spend on beer and pizza. Well, when Congress writes a budget, they promptly spend $700 billion more than they planned.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a budget.
No.
I mean, why bother putting it down on paper if you're going to miss by over $500 billion?
No, I don't know.
And there was an article recently, just last week in the USA Today, front page story, that said that the average American family has about $80,000 in personal debt, and that their share of the national debt is $473,000. That's a $500,000 per family.
That's a lot of money.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, I have to work a long time to make that money, and that would have to do that starving to death.
Me too. That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. And
so,
I can't imagine. It boggles my imagination to think that people in America can continue to vote for the Democrats and Republicans who got us into this mess.
Well, but one of the reasons they can do that, Michael, is because they're not presented with any other choices. I mean, somebody on 48 states ballots in Washington damn well should be in the debates, and if he isn't, it's...
criminal.
Well, yeah, criminal. Yeah, criminal is a good word. It's a good word. Criminal is a great word. And I hope that you win the lawsuit. I hope that, and if you don't, that you get enough publicity, it shakes somebody up. Somebody's got to shake up this country. I tell you, I voted for Ross Perot in Iran just because I thought he'd shake up the status quo.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Well, I'm planning to, continue lighting the fires of liberty even after the election. I have a new book that's being published, currently available at Amazon.com. The name of the book is Good to Be King, and it talks about why we have a constitution at all. I mean, why not just, you know, live in anarchy? And if that's not acceptable, why this form of government? Why did the founding fathers give us a constitutional republic? And
I hope it sells well. It's out now, Amazon, those kind
Amazon.
Of places.
Amazon.com, you can go and look for Good to Be King.
Okay. All right. It has been a pleasure having you on. I'm sorry we're out of time, as my Canadian friends would say.
Out of time?
Yeah, out of time. Michael, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Stay out of jail.
I will certainly try.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Michael Pettenderek, the Libertarian candidate for the presidency of the United States. Yikes.
To talk with Art Bell, Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Indeed. So, you know, I let the music go because it sets the mood for me. And I'm sure for a lot of other people, too. I mean, this is just the right music for Major Ed Baines. Period. And what that means, among other things, is that this is my instruction to you to, if you're going to be upset by dire predictions, they don't call him what they call him for nothing. It's going to be rough. I mean, what can I tell you? It's liable. What you're going to hear is going to be rough. So if you're going to be upset by it or you have children in the room, shoo them out. It's their bedtime. They don't need to hear what we may be about to hear. Dr. Doom is for a reason. It's some pretty rough predictions. I mean, it's just the way it is. And so if you're upset by this kind of thing, tune out. You know, turn off the radio. Go watch some television or something else. This will challenge you. I guarantee what you're about to hear is going to challenge you. I know who Ed Dames is. A lot of you know who he is. And a lot of you may not. He's a remote viewer. He was in the U.S. government's, the CIA's remote viewing program. I know. I read his whole military record. He's exactly what he says he is. That's exactly what he did. It was in the official military record. I sat there. It took a while. It was a big one. Big, fat military record. So he really did this for the CIA. But I you know, a lot of what he's going to say, I'm telling you, is going to upset you. The world's foremost remote viewing teacher, Major Edward A. Dames, U.S. Army, retired now, is a decorated military intelligence officer, an original member of the U.S. Army prototype remote viewing training program, served as the training and operations officer for the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit. He currently serves as executive director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency, a private consulting group. Ed is a technical consultant for the feature film Suspect Zero. Been a lot of previews about that lately, by the way, and plays the role of an FBI remote viewing instructor in the movie as well. There is nobody that I have on this program that gets more love and hate mail, email, than Major Ed Dames. When I have him scheduled to come on the air, I will get, hundreds of emails saying, "What? You're going to have that fraud on again?" And others who will say, "He is by far my favorite guest that you have." There's no in-between. There's no Major Ed Dames again or anything like that. There's only those two polar opposite reactions, and they come in volumes, tons of them. He is the most loved and hated guest I have on the air, and he'll be here in a moment. Oh, by the way, you can fast blast me, you know, go up on the website, coasttocoastam.com, and send me a quick little message. There's no guarantee that I will use the question, but I appreciate questions for the guest as we go along, and I will pluck the good ones from my screen and ask them. And in that spirit, having had Michael Benerick on last hour, libertarian candidate for the presidency, somebody wrote to me and said, "Oh, now you're in trouble, Art. Now you're going to have to invite President Bush and Senator Kerry." So, let's do that, all right? President Bush, Senator Kerry, whoever is entitled to equal time lay it on us. I'd love to have President Bush here. Now, I'd do a whole four, no, make that a five-hour show with the president. Or Senator Kerry. I'd do a five-hour show with Senator Kerry. So you are hereby officially invited to the program. No problem. God, I'd jump at it. So I don't think I'm in trouble. And I will not hold my breath for a call either. Here's Major Ed Dames. Welcome back, Ed.
I'm honored to be on your show again, Art. 8 years this month, by the way.
You mean 8 years we've been doing programs?
Yes. Yep.
Is it really that long?
8 years.
Wow. Get good and close to that phone for me. I know it's a new phone. You've gone out and done well. You've bought a new phone, right?
Okay, I'm close.
That's good. All right. Yes, 8 years is a long time. And, I can't stress to you enough, Ed, when the minute it goes up on the website that you're going to be on, the reactions begin. And there's no in-between reaction. It's either they love your butt or they would like to see you tarred, feathered, and dumped in a third world country never to be seen again.
Well, I'm used to that reaction. I mean, I've been in that position in the military where the messenger had to be shot. That's me. And in the commercial arena where you bring someone the truth that they wanted, but now they realize it's not the truth they want to hear. I can give you one example, if I may.
Sure.
When I was an intelligence officer in Germany, electronic warfare officer, my commander, retired as a two-star general, asked me how World War III would start there, how the 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment, you know, would be informed of the start of World War III.
Mm-hmm.
I said, this is the way it's going to go, according to the Soviets. What will happen is Soviet Spetsnaz agents, Soviet Special Forces agents, will lob some VR-55 nerve gas grenades into the compounds of American students, elementary school students, during their lunch breaks. The shock of that event will buy them enough time to make it past our defensive positions and cross and make it through Bamberg and all of forward defenses. My commander was appalled at me. He took it out on me. Because he thought I was some type of a barbaric animal. And I was telling him, sir, you've got to remember, the mindset of our enemy is different than yours, which is honorable, according mm-hmm. to our paradigm. But he still wasn't very happy with my answer. But it was the truth. That's actually what they had planned upon doing.
It did not happen?
Well, World War III didn't happen. And then
But I mean, you predicted that for when?
No, it wasn't a prediction. It was actually
a remote
as a spy. My job was to find out how they would hit us first, right? And that was before my remote viewing days. So it started before remote viewing. I'm used to this art.
So this was you're talking here about real intelligence gathered in a way other than by remote viewing.
Correct. Spies, agents on the ground. In this case, yeah.
Wow. All right. I got to start with this, Ed, because it hit me like a brick. And, you know, I had a million people email me. When this recent explosion occurred in Korea, a very mysterious explosion, I must say, in North Korea, and the first headlines were that it was probably a nuclear detonation because they saw a nuclear cloud or a cloud that mimicked a nuclear cloud. It went that, you know, some many, many, many miles into the air. The crater was enormous. It's almost like if that wasn't nuclear, it sure as hell looked like it. And when I heard that, they came streaming in the emails, the fast blast. Ed got it right. Even if it's not a nuclear blast, a remote viewer would have seen the big mushroom cloud, and it certainly would have looked like a nuclear blast. So it seemed like a hit, but I have a feeling you're going to say no.
That's correct. I'm going to say no.
It wasn't a hit.
That wasn't a hit because it wasn't the thing that I've been predicting for 8 years, which will be the next use of a nuclear weapon in anger. That will be on the Korean Peninsula, and that was not it. Now, you're going to see it. You're going to see it soon because the DPRK is upping the ante here. I mean, so are we. It's been a big provocation. We now have a missile cruiser patrolling the straits there.
Mm-hmm.
you have a statement that's only a week old that, and I quote, using the English translation, the U.S. has no monopoly on a first strike, unquote.
So well, the Chris, you know, I take it that was probably over a North Korean radio.
No, it was indeed.
Like
it was,
yeah, yeah.
But they're telegraphing exactly what they're going to do. They said they were going to. They said they had weapons. They had weapons. They said they're going to build nukes. Now they're going to build them. Essentially, they're telling us what they're going to do, and that is an ominous statement. However, if you think about the situation they're in. They probably will use any provocation to begin a war. Now,
well,
they may test the weapon first.
We know they've got 6 or maybe 7 nuclear bombs. That's the latest thinking. I was on the so-called debates.
Yeah, they still need to test one, though. And it isn't just that they need to test them. They will want to do that, to join the nuclear club.
Sure.
Yeah, they'll want to do that, and they have to test one logistically.
Okay, I'm going to take back what I said. Move just a little away from the phone. We'll get it just right. I don't mean to disparage your phone, but it's popping its piece. All right, so you're saying they're going to, and you're right. I mean, if they've really got nuclear devices, they will have to test one to prove to the world they're in the club, right?
Correct. Now. In the old days, they could use an ally who has more land area and make a trade. North Koreans would trade technology for a place to test their weapons, but that's not going to happen. They're not going to be able to get away with transporting a weapon to another ally, a country, and test it in these days and times. So they'll do it on their own land or in the sea.
Do they have... enough barren land? Do they have the equivalent of the area where I live, or not very far from it, like Mercury, the test site or some place they could explode a bomb and I don't know, it'd be all right. Bare land, yeah.
They barely have enough area. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Now they may not test one. They may test it on us. In other words. If they're going to prevent our preemptive attack and use one of their weapons, they might want to test it on us, see if it works against, let's say, a missile cruiser.
But that would be
an act of war.
It would be an absolute act of war.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
We're going to go to war on the Korean Peninsula.
We are.
That's as much a fait accompli. As the Israelis neutralizing the Iranian nascent nuclear program.
Right.
Both those things are going to happen.
All right, well, let's see if you're actually telling us something that we can write down here. Are you saying the next war is going to begin that way? Are you sort of officially saying that they will use the bomb in that way instead of testing, or?
No. What I'm saying, and I stand by, is that the next use of a nuclear weapon will be on the Korean Peninsula.
In anger,
yes.
No.
So regardless of whether or not they test one, they're still going to use one on us there. And World War III has already started. These will just be more conflagrations within a war that's already started.
Have you done any remote viewing in the hierarchy in North Korea? I don't know if you can remote view intentions and plans and what's going on. Can you?
You can get into the mind of Kim Il-sung, get into the mind of his commanders.
Have you done that?
To a limited degree, because frankly, it wouldn't pay off. In terms of information, would not be that great in light of other things I'll say tonight. Things are happening so fast and furious now. I mean, I think 2005 and 2000, for instance, this Thanksgiving, stay home and give thanks, because last year was the last Merry Christmas we're going to have. This Christmas, don't go out and buy anything. Stay home. Just stay home.
All right. Well, you can't stop with just saying that. I mean, you've got to
tell us. What I'm saying is, Tell us
why.
You're facing a global economic collapse in 2005. You're facing at least one or both of these two scenarios, one in the Mideast, one on the Korean Peninsula.
Hold on, that was a big one all by itself. A global economic collapse in 2005.
Roger that.
The idea of the scale of this?
Well, it, as you know, U.S. is, in terms of our economy, is a house of cards right now. But the scale, I think it will affect the United States more than other countries, particularly. But it will be global. It will be global.
Well, if it's the U.S., it becomes global. You know, I've seen the world economy swing with our economy. So what happens here reverberates and happens elsewhere in the world. That's true. Can you tell me anything about this collapse? I mean, what precipitates it? I know we have a lot of debt right now.
No, I haven't looked at the actual thing that facilitates it.
Could it be something like a nuclear strike, a terrorist strike on the U.S. that would precipitate that?
I'm not sure. I just see the house coming down. That's all. What I'm saying here is that there are so many things happening at once. It's difficult. It's not that difficult to go in piecemeal and break out all the things that are happening. But the big picture is that the great nothing is looming. The curtain is falling on this age, this great purge that I've been talking about, this kill shot. It's right here in front of us now. We can't see it because we're so close. The blind man and the elephant. You're standing right next to the elephant. You can't see the elephant because the elephant's so close. All these things, this confluence of events, are right here.
All right. Stop at kill shot. Let's get that one out of the way. This is one of your most notorious statements, this kill shot thing. You have done this through remote viewing. You have determined that the sun has already predicted the, you predicted the, prediction is, I guess, a bad word, huh? What should I say when I'm referring to
you can
this?
Use the word remote viewed. Remote viewing is through a lens darkly, albeit very accurately darkly, but we use the term remote viewed.
Okay, I'm giving you credit. You absolutely successfully remote viewed the shot across the bow, so-called. We got that tremendous, incredible, unheard-of spewing from the sun, which you confirmed was what you said would happen. That would be the shot across the bow. The next event would be the main event, so to speak.
A series of kill shots.
Flares from the sun so serious they threaten the life of the Earth on the Earth. Yes?
Yes.
And you believe that the first of this series might begin as soon as...
I know that this is true. When wars really begin to flare up on several continents, these wars, remember the comment that I've made in the past is that all the warring parties all of a sudden look up, literally look into the sky,
uh-huh.
and then disperse. Because their priorities change. So that, in other words, this would preclude the idea of a nuclear slugfest, a world nuclear war. That doesn't happen. It might happen. It might be one of those things that would happen, but this kill shot
mm-hmm.
precludes that from happening.
Wow. So the kill shot precludes it from happening.
Because priorities change. The impact geophysically.
Yeah, obviously, if the sun spit at us and people died, then wars would seem immediately rather insignificant compared to the entire planet being in peril. There's no question about that. But we've got to talk a lot more about it because people have said, you know, the kill shot. Ah, see, it never happened. Well, look, a lot of things that this man has said have happened. Some haven't, but not 100%, but an awful lot of them really have happened. I'm a witness to that, so you got to listen and you know, be careful. This is all worrisome stuff. And if this kind of thing, if you can't digest it, you're going to want to turn the radio off and not torture yourself. From the high desert in the middle of the night, Major Ed Dames is my guest, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Indeed so. How many of you remember the movie The Core? Remember that? In The Core, the Earth's magnetic field became disturbed, actually stopped, for reasons that were explained in the movie. And this then exposed the Earth to whatever might happen, and they used a peach as an example, and a can of hairspray or something that they lit on fire. The peach just went and burned right up. And of course, you know, there some hold the view that the Earth, if unprotected by the field, the magnetic field, would suddenly be vulnerable to a strike from the sun. And if you were to have an eruption the size of the sun headed toward the Earth that we had not very long ago, that big one that the major called the shot over the bow that he predicted, remote viewed, excuse me. Well, then that's it. I mean, we're talking about a very serious event here, and a lot of people have emailed about this, so we'll expand on it, this kill shot thing. We'll be right back. So, Ed, I'm curious, did you see The Core, the movie?
I did. In fact, I know Aaron Eckhart, the star of that. I trained him for his role in Suspect Zero.
I thought, actually, The Core was quite a good movie and underrated or something. You know, I'm a science fiction buff, and I thought it was pretty damn good. Anyway, you remember the scene where they had the peach, right? And they roasted the peach until it was on fire and then dunked it in a glass of water, and they said, gentlemen, that's going to be the Earth.
And the scenario that I'm proposing is that the Earth turns like, and we become like a rotisserie. It isn't that fast blast that you get like that, although where protons come down to the deck as well as
that. Well, they had to speed it up for the movie, but I get the idea. You're saying we're like a roast on a spit.
Essentially so, yes. And we get several of these shots, although not as graphic as you saw in The Core. But over time, very, very damaging. And
all right, for that to happen, as was properly depicted in the core, the Earth's magnetic field would virtually have to become neutralized, right?
The way that we, as a professional team, are envisioning this happening, and I laid all this out on that DVD. I sent that to you, the Killshot DVD.
Right.
I laid this all out. The way that we envision this happening is that, I'll have more to say about this in our show tonight, a very large passing space body, planet-sized body, not a comet, not an asteroid, approaches Earth, we think, from the south, comes very close to Earth, crosses our trajectory, and it somehow electrically aligns itself between the sun and the Earth. That electrical alignment shuts down Earth's magnetic field. So it has nothing to do with the core per se at that moment, but it shuts down the Earth's electric field.
And this is from the passing of a planetoid size object.
Yes.
All right. You know, if something like that big was coming at us, and I'm not an astronomer, so I can't answer this question, but I would like to know, I mean, how much warning would we have? Would we see it months ahead of time?
Depending on the trajectory and its obliquity, we'd see it probably 3 to 6 months out.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that alone at that point, Ed, when knowledge like that was made public, and it couldn't help but be, eventually, at some point, it would have to be made public, and the public would then watch all the experts on CNN and Fox and MSNBC and all the rest of them saying, well, here's what's going to happen, you know, or potentially could happen just as a result of this object passing that close to Earth, so that alone could be a total panic, right?
I'm not sure about that. That's problematic, but it gets two shots at us, too, inbound through the solar system and outbound as well, too. So it's got two chances of passing close.
It would panic me.
Yeah, well...
I mean, if I heard that and it was close, I mean, after all...
It appears to be a cyclic thing, the idea of Nibiru or Planet X with a period of 11,500 years or thereabouts, that does appear to be correct, where each 11,500 years this thing comes in to the inner orbits of the solar system and passes at some distance from the planets, Earth being one of them. This next pass, however, which we think is pretty imminent within the next several years at the most, is going to be close enough to actually influence the rotational axis of the Earth. I'm not talking about the magnetic axis, magnetic field, polar shift there. I'm talking about the rotational axis of the Earth. The Earth will wobble on its axis. That is why this, at least one pass before or two passes before, this city that they found, they're researching off the coast of Cuba at 2,200 feet under the water,
yes,
suddenly made it down to 2,200 feet. It was a sudden geological shift.
Incidentally, there's been a recent, sort of like someone dropped the ball. There hasn't been any news about that geological discovery now in months and months and months and months, maybe a year. I mean, just no talk about it at all. It's really strange.
Think of the implications of an announcement. There can be only one reason why that city is down there. We'll talk about Atlantis too momentarily. There can be only one reason, only one cause for something to be that's, let's say, less city-sized structures to be less that are less than 20,000 years old. Possibly.
You know, I hate to tell you this, Ed, but your phone is terrible. You bought a new phone and it's terrible. It's as bad as the other ones.
Hold on.
Okay. You know, we're calling Hawaii. Ed's in Hawaii.
How's this?
Give me a little more. It sounds pretty good.
Okay.
Oh, God, that's so much better, Ed.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's so much better. Okay, great. Appreciate it. Now, to continue, the Earth's wobbling.
Okay, you got the Earth, and we're not talking precession or any of those little things. We're talking an actual wobble. And as the Earth wobbles, No, it's going to wobble for a while, and then reestablish homeostasis with a new, looking at a new pole star. We'll have a new pole star. But in all of this process, you've got oceans sloshing around like they did once before, or who knows how many times before, and all this is laid out on that kill shot DVD that I sent you in detail. And then you've got these massive solar flares. I call it shake and bake, essentially. And you've got high winds, too, because after the Earth starts to wobble and all that energy is translated into the atmosphere, and we've talked about this before, there'll be bands and belts on the Earth that have very high sustained winds, 200, 300 miles an hour for weeks at a time.
All right. I'm going to be a hopeful skeptic for a second. I'm going to say, you know, one of the things that remote viewers can't seem to get right are timelines, when something is going to happen. It seems to be the Achilles heel in remote viewing. Otherwise, you'd be able to tell us this will begin to occur January 13th of 2005 or
we
something like that.
We may be getting close to doing that. I'm going to get into that more when I talk about a technical breakthrough that we have. We may actually be able to, in terms of geological events, where you don't have humans making decisions, where it is a large geological event, a large spike on the horizon in terms of picking it up psychically. Those things we may actually be able to nail down, to tell you the truth, because of a breakthrough that we've had. However, at this juncture, the best that we can do is say this, that when, and I mentioned this on a last show, I believe, when a space shuttle is forced to the ground by a meteor shower, that is the nearest recognizable event to the first kill shot.
You know, it's not the same thing, of course, but there was a story recently of the space shuttle perhaps having to be abandoned because of an oxygen generator problem. The Russians are trying to get a piece or a part up there to fix it. But if not, it would have to be abandoned.
No, that's the space station. I'm talking to the space shuttle.
Uh-huh. Well, nevertheless, I thought about you when I heard that. You know, I mean, just an abandonment of the ISS or of a shuttle or whatever would be gigantic news. And I sort of brushed against what you had said to me when I heard that.
Our sketches were specifically of the space shuttle.
Well,
we can do precision experts.
Yeah, a shuttle would be involved in any evacuation of the ISS, right?
But this meteor shower, which in and of itself is unprecedented, forcing down the shuttle, that has to be in that equation, too.
Is this meteor shower related to this planetoid-sized object?
We believe that it may be, but we're not sure. I mean, in terms of proximity and time, they're pretty darn close because we're saying that this event is the nearest recognizable event before the kill shot, and that the kill shot is facilitated by the passing body. So
okay, so here we are with this time problem. You're giving me right now the way a remote viewer would normally give it to me. Here's the thing you want to watch for that's going to happen just before the next thing happens, right? That's how you guys tell time.
That's, we have to bracket it that way, the same way we used to do with targets on the ground, and that's changed.
But who's to say that the shuttle being forced down by a meteor shower might not happen next year or next week? Pull it back next week, and then maybe the kill shot doesn't happen for another 100 years.
The nearest recognizable event. In terms of our protocols, our newsworthy types of events, the shuttles are grounded until at least late spring next year.
Right.
So as far as we're concerned, my team is concerned, we're not going to have to worry about that until minimally then. And also, shuttle technology is getting very old very quickly and will be replaced. So there's only going to be a window of usefulness for the shuttle of about 2 to 3 years before it's replaced by other technology. So as far as we're concerned, that narrows down this particular event to somewhere between 2005 and 2008.
That's a good point. But then comes the next question, which I alluded to, which is, but then there's some unsureness about how far out the kill shot might be from that, or if there is no question about it, and you can tell us exactly, then be my guest. But, you know, we're marking events here. So I'm trying to be on the hopeful side, Ed, that it might be 100 years.
Now, when we say nearest, it's nearest in time. And that particular qualifier in terms of our search strategy works. For instance, if we were to look let's say we were describing a very large terrorist event that we see up front. Let's say a very unique, very large terrorist event, and we want to know when that happens. We've established where.
Do you see one, by the way?
I'm not gonna talk about that at this juncture.
Why not? I mean, it's probably like the number one question on the mind of most Americans out there.
I've shifted my resources to another thing, which I would like to talk to you about tonight. I understand how important it is. I have not been called to assist. If I was called to assist on something like that, I may, but I have not been called, and I feel personally there's something more important.
Does it? Well, yes, perhaps so. But
that's the reason.
It is a biggie, nevertheless. I mean, it really is a biggie in the minds of so many Americans. But you're right. I mean, if the kill shot should come along, then it's all kind of moot, isn't it?
I have shifted to something bigger than the kill shot.
Well,
I've shifted to the idea of reconstruction, and in a very certain way, in a very specific way.
In other words, you're now beginning to look at after the event.
I'm beginning to look at preparing now for reconstruction later, in a way that is revolutionary and a fantastic discovery that I wanted to talk to you about tonight.
Mm-hmm. How many people are going to be around to reconstruct?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
It's another big important question.
Yeah, and that's something that really is so so qualitative that it's beyond the limitations of what we as remote viewers can do right now. It's too big. It's too big for us to handle. For instance, if you asked me indirectly, we could come to some type of a conclusion. But let's say, for instance, the CIA asked me once to determine whether a particular metal in a Russian laboratory that we were remote viewing was U-238 or U-235. Which alloy was this of uranium?
How would you figure that out?
Well, we can't. What I'm saying is that we cannot, adjudge the size of an electron cloud and determine, you know, what one or the other. So what we had to do it indirectly, and we succeeded in doing it indirectly by looking at where the ore was extracted and where it was refined, backtracking all the way back to the mining, to the mine head itself,
huh,
and that kind of thing. So we were able to deduce what it was, but when you get into qualitative numbers like that, up until now we haven't been able to do that. However, that may have changed suddenly, abruptly. There's been a major, major discovery in our work recently.
All right. You've got my attention. Work that leads where? Toward nailing these times down?
It may lead to nailing the times down, but right now what it's led to is nailing down precise geographic positions with GPS accuracy. And we have never been able to do that.
Oh, that would be a big one, all right.
We've already done it, and we're doing proof-of-principle operations work now. We field-tested it, and it works. If I can elaborate on this a minute.
I want to know how, yeah.
Okay. In the original Army DIA and CIA unit, the Sci Spy unit, for which I was operations and training officer, the DIA unit, that is, we were able to describe as a team, let's say, a hostage or a terrorist location quite well.
Right, the immediate surroundings, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, the immediate surroundings, the health of the hostage, all that kind of stuff. But where was the where? That has been our bugbear for the last 21 years that I have been operational as a viewer and an instructor. My colleague and partner, Brent Miller, has been testing a system. He told me about it. I tried it out, very skeptical. and it looked like it was working. So I had my fingers crossed. I didn't want to get overly optimistic. Field tested it, and the darn thing works like a charm. What it can do is it can return precise geographic coordinates. Exactly. Any target that you can describe, any person, anything, we can determine within 50 feet where it is on the planet. One viewer working by themselves. We've never had anything like this before. You can imagine the ramifications.
I absolutely can. Gigantic, if true.
Testing it in two areas right now.
And the percentage of success so far in the tests you have done?
100.
100%?
100. And no reason to believe that it will ever fail because it's foolproof. So we've got to show the public this, and we're doing it in two venues. One is with a cold case, the remains of a murdered child, and the other is with a gold treasure in the Southwest. What we're going to do is we picked a treasure that's on public lands. It's on homogeneous terrain.
Don't forget Amelia Earhart either, right?
That's an expedition.
You could really nail it down now. Listen, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. I want to know how you nail it down.
Get a shiver in the dark. It's raining in the park. But meantime, sound of the river, you're stopping your whole everything.
Can't believe what you're hearing? Listen to it again when you sign up for Streamlink at www.coasttocoastam.com. It's only 15 cents a day.
I've had a lot of requests from people.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
So much to talk about, but, yeah, I'll buy into this. Indeed, if remote viewers all of a sudden could actually pin down whatever it is they're describing geographically to within the accuracy limits of GPS, that would be a monster. For remote viewing in general, it would be an absolute monster. So, of course, coming up next, Ed will tell us exactly how it is done. The two biggest problems with remote viewing have always been where and when. Where and when. That's what everybody wants to know, of course. Where and when. Well, Major Ed Dames is saying, my guest, that he thinks he's got the where part nailed down Now, that would be just monstrous for remote viewers worldwide. It would be front page remote viewing headlines, for sure. And so I'm sure that Ed is now going to tell us exactly how it's done. Right, Ed?
Well, Art, you have to understand the fundamentals. In order to understand exactly how it's done, one would need to understand the fundamentals of remote viewing. For instance, I couldn't tell you how a television worked unless you understood something, and you do, but unless you and your listeners understood something about electronics and cathode ray tubes and or LCDs, depending on the case. But I can give you a general description. And while we're on the subject, though, that the that very comprehensive remote viewing course that I took a year to produce is now out and being shipped. People who want to learn this can learn it there. Then they would have the fundamentals down to understand explicitly what I'm talking about. But for you, I'll tell you this. The system avails itself of something like, let's say, a terrain index reference system, where we have random, and this is a changing matrix, where we have random marked points, many, many of them, across the surface of the globe, a map of the Earth.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
We use a blind, and actually a double-blind method. After we determine what our target is, let's say Osama bin Laden or Amelia Earhart's Electra, Lockheed Electra.
Okay.
Or
yes.
Or something like that. We pick the target, and then we determine which is the closest terrain index reference point. After that stage, we relay the matrix down again in a random fashion, and we determine an azimuth and actually a vector, a distance and a direction from that terrain index reference point to the location.
Is this done by, for example, assigning numbers to indexed points, increasingly magnified on a map? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, I can see where you're going. I mean, I can be inside your head when you're talking like that, and I can see what you're thinking about, essentially. That's not difficult to do. Yes, it's like that. We're ever-increasing magnification. This process does not take long. One viewer can do it and be 100% correct, and I mean 100% correct.
Huh.
But it is a good idea, even though you can get it right down to a gnat's derriere position.
Yeah.
Still a good idea to use regular remote viewing to sketch and describe the location. It's still a good idea to do that. So you go to the field armed with both things. So that is an extreme breakthrough. We tested it, field tested it. I have to express my gratitude to my partner, Brent Miller, who really developed the system. I just simplified it for my own uses. It works like a charm.
Well, this ought to be enough, it seems to me, to throw remote viewing back over the top again in terms of people's faith in it if you can prove this.
Yes, we need ground. We need success. We need ground truth. And I've chosen two targets specifically to demonstrate proof of principle and ground truth to the public.
Well, you want to air it here? We've got the public here.
Well, we have to actually do it. And December is the month where we're actually in the field on these two cases. The one is I know you don't like to listen to this, and it's a very unsavory topic.
A missing child.
Yeah, it's a missing child, okay? And we believe through our regular remote viewing work, our orthodox work, that the child has been murdered. We've sat down with her mother and the police and the press and expressed this.
So now you're going to be able to walk right to the gravesite.
Yeah, so we were in, it turns out that in August, 2 months ago, my team was digging in a spot that was close, but no banana. This new system that we've developed, which is still proprietary.
Yes. I thought you were going to use that word at the top of the hour when I said Ed's going to tell us all about it. Now, I thought the next thing I'd hear is proprietary.
Well, we're going to keep it proprietary for a while. I mean, it's worth its weight in gold. No pun intended when I tell you about the next target.
Uh-huh.
So that doesn't mean, you know, remote viewers still can't describe things and sketch the locations, but this system takes you, it's as good as the development of a GPS.
For remote viewing, yes, sir.
Yes, it is. So anyway, we've already completed the work on identifying the location of this child, and it turns out we were almost a mile away, that the site itself where her remains really are, this is a 13-year-old girl who disappeared 25 years ago, it's a cold case. It turns out that her remains are in a very similar spot, but analytically it looks the same, but we were off.
So who are you going to take to the remains? How does that work? When it comes down to it in December or whenever and you want to prove this to the world, who do you call?
The same press that there was a newspaper, a television station, and law enforcement from two agencies with us. They'll be with us there again this time.
Isn't there any little, let me lay something on you, Ed, just as a, I don't know, I don't mean this in any negative way, nor do I mean to accuse you of anything, but I'll tell you, Ed, if I was in law enforcement and a remote viewer like you called me and said, look, I'm going to lead you to a body, or even if it happened with the press the way you're proposing, you have a movie called Zero Suspect, right?
Suspect
Zero. Well, you'd be Suspect One. If you were able to lead the police to a murdered body, dig it right up and get it right away, you'd be Suspect One. I mean, haven't you thought about that?
Yeah, and of course, long ago. But because of your show over the years and people who know you and I, many, many, many people in law enforcement are Art Bell fans, Coast to Coast fans.
Yeah, and some aren't.
Yes.
I mean, it's a danger.
No, it's not really. It's not really, because I have alibis. You know, go ahead and cuff me. What the heck, you know? It's pretty easy to have an alibi.
Well, you'd be the second guest in one night that got cuffed, so.
Yeah, it isn't anything that I worry about or my team at all.
All right.
So that's one thing. But the case that's more interesting to people, and my partner likes this a lot too, is these cases we can bring ground truth to. If I chose as a first case something that I'd have to mount an expedition for,
uh-huh.
That takes a lot of resources and time, and I have other things I want to do.
All right, and the second thing that you're going to do?
The second thing that we've already begun work on, a target, is a specific treasure that's in the U.S. Southwest. This is just solid gold. It's just nothing but gold, gold coins and gold bars. We've chosen this one particular treasure, and I won't name it. And it's on public land. It's in very homogeneous terrain.
Is it near me, Ed?
Not that close,
no,
but
okay.
Not that far away either.
Oh, all right.
Okay, so it's in homogeneous terrain, which means that our traditional orthodox means of locating or describing something would really be almost impossible to use to attack this particular target. It's in a very homogeneous area. Let's say desert.
Okay, let's say desert. So you're saying you're going to lead, again, probably what, the press?
No. Not this time.
Not on this one. No.
We're going in alone and quiet.
Yeah.
We're going to pull that out of the ground because it's in the shallow area, but it's 150 years old. It's been in the ground for 150 years. We're going to take that stuff, pack it in a Jeep,
yes.
And drive to Pahrump and knock on your gate.
Oh, right.
No, seriously. I'm deadly serious about this. We're going to actually do that. I'll call you ahead of time. It's a good photo op.
You're telling me, photo op. You're going to have a trunk full of treasure.
Yep. Yeah.
How much treasure? Does your remote viewing tell you that?
Yeah, it does.
It does. How much?
Yeah, I won't tell you how many gold bars because that would give away the treasure. But it's a number of gold bars and a whole bunch of gold coins. Okay?
Yes.
So it's not that many hundred pounds, but that'll be in a trunk. That'll be in the trunk of a car or the back of a Jeep. So when we pop that and let you play with that stuff there, that'll be our photo op.
You're some weird guy, Ed. You're going to come to my house?
I'm going to come to your house, yeah.
Sheesh.
You and I together put remote viewing on the map.
Yeah, well, all these things would definitely do that, and you're saying December, huh?
Yes, December. So That's, you know,
is that a
I'm
hard,
on the line
hard,
for this.
Is that a hard date or a soft date?
No, that's a hard date.
That's a hard date.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, you guys don't often pin yourselves down like this.
No, same thing, with the child's remains. So that's two operations that will demonstrate proof of principle here. That way, you know, when we tell the public where Osama bin Laden is, or where Atlantis is, or where the bind, torture, kill, a serial killer is in Wichita, Kansas, then we have an audience because we have a track record.
You have a rapt audience.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll just, you know, that would do it. I mean, all these years, people have been waiting for something they could really put their hands on that would prove that there's something beyond us, no matter what arena you want to talk about. Well, what you're saying you can do would absolutely do that.
Yes, and I have a lot of faith in this, too. I've been around in this business for 21 years, teaching and doing it, and this along with the project that I'm going to talk to you about this evening that eclipses those other things.
Oh, yeah, well, there's the other thing, Ed, and we've got to go back to that now. We have to. As fascinating, really fascinating, as everything you just brought forth is, it's kind of moot when you consider the kill shot. It's, in fact, everything seems moot once you consider, you know, some people are calling Planet X or whatever, passing so close to the Earth that we all get fried, roasted, turned upside down,
not
blown away or something, but a bunch of us.
Mm.
And so, you know, a lot of people just have a hard time getting past that at all.
I understand.
And then you also said earlier, right, we can't leave our homes on Thanksgiving or Christmas this year. People want to know more about that.
What I mean is that a couple of years ago, the year before last, I said on your show, this is the last Merry Christmas we're going to have.
Yep.
You know, that was just before 9/11. There aren't going to be any more Merry Christmases.
And what's going to make it so unmerry specifically? I mean, that is a timeline.
I'm just saying 2005 is the stuff that's going to hit the fan from so many directions, Art. That is why I wanted to talk to you about this next project. The reason I want successes on the missing child and the treasure,
yes,
because that will get public attention, is because I want an audience for the other project, to talk about the other project, which is critical to mankind.
Project.
Yes.
All right, so does this project that you're talking about have some way of lessening the impact or stopping what otherwise will happen? Is it a project of that magnitude?
It's a project of great magnitude, but not along those lines. It's a project not along those lines. It deals with reconstruction. And it deals with the future rather than the now and the past. But it's very, very important. This is where I wanted to bring up the subject of John.
So you're going to do these things in December so you can establish enough public credibility to then motivate, I suppose, millions of people with this project that you're apparently not going to tell us all about.
I am going to tell you about it.
You are?
Yes. But it's so on the edge that listeners outside of your bailiwick, you know, would walk away and turn it back, rightly so.
Well, a number of them do that. Believe me, they do. They don't like messengers, bad news.
This is good news, though, Art. This one's good. It's scary, but it's good.
Well, I know, but to get to the B part of the good news, you got to go through the bad news first, apparently.
Yeah, this is something that's promising and holds great promise, and it deals with the subject of extraterrestrials and contact.
Oh,
it is Project Starman.
Oh, well, you know, that's another thing I'll say for you over the years. You have been nothing if not consistent, always consistent through the years. Never waffling, to use a modern word. You've never waffled. You've always said the same thing. And Starman, I remember when you initially told me about Starman. And so I guess I guess we need to know then, Ed, how this project, in what way will it make the world a better place, or what's going to happen less, or more people surviving, or it's got to be something like that.
I have to put it into perspective, and that, again, that's why I wanted to bring up John Mack and his work, how his work influenced me, and in the context of Project Starman.
I'm so sorry John Mack's gone.
I am greatly saddened by his passing. He and I have not spent enough time together. I had the privilege of speaking with alongside him in Germany a number of years ago, and something he presented had such an impact on me. That's not to say that all of his other work, and I encourage your listeners, if you're not familiar with Professor Mack's work, that it's...
Well, I have interviews with Professor Mack that have been on the website since his untimely passing, so people can familiarize themselves with Professor Mack. That will live forever. That's one of the wonderful things, like a book. The audio of this will be available forever. So, what was it about his work, Ed, that so hit you, so impressed you?
It was the entire corpus was impressed me. But there was one thing that had a great impact upon the direction I took in terms of the UFO problem. And, over the last 8 years, we've talked about that at length. There was an incident in Zimbabwe in 1994, September 16th, 1994, at a school. Once on a show that you and I did together, I talked about this incident where more than 60 school children, ages 6 through 12, walked out into the bushland that had joined their playground at a break and ran back and reported an incident where there was a flying saucer, a bunch of small flying saucers, a bunch of bug-eyed people, that kind of thing. And telepathically, they were told that the planet is dying and we need to take care of it. But I think that was actually a requiem announcement rather than a warning announcement. Now, John Mack just happened to be in Africa when this incident occurred and went up there to Zimbabwe near Harare, the capital at the time,
right,
the RAF school, and interviewed. And I saw this interview on 35mm film. He played it. The parents of the children, most of the children, did not allow him to distribute this tape, but I got to see it before that happened.
Really?
Yeah. These children had not been exposed to Western media, TV, all that. They were all questioned independently. I saw both John Mack and the children. John Mack did not lead these children on.
I'm with you. All right. This is one of the better hooks that I've seen come along. You want to know what those children said? Well, Ed saw the tape. I know I want to know. So in a moment, if you'll just stay where you are, you too will know. I'm Art Bell.
Thank you.
talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Many things are said after any Ed Dames appearance on this program, but there's one word that's never used. Whatever they say, and they say a lot, but they never say boring. All right, we're on to something obviously very big. What you're about to hear involves something these children said to John Mack in the video that Ed has seen of that, and it all winds into Project Starman. So here we go. Set us up again with the children. John Mack was where and how many children and when
okay.
was this? And
this was this particular event, this incident, took place at a school, the Ariel School, near the capital of Zimbabwe, Harare, capital, on September 16th, 1994.
All right.
There were, it was a break. The staff of the school, the international school, were at a meeting. There were some older children that were playing basketball on the basketball court and witnessed a very large group of younger school children, elementary school children, from 6 to 12, walk away and into the brush. They thought it was odd, but didn't stop playing basketball.
Well, it's odd for children to do that. How many was it again?
About 60.
60? 60?
Uh-huh.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. And a number of these children were interviewed. I got to see these on tape, along with Professor Mack interviewing them. And, again, these children, international, a multiracial group of children, very good school, very little exposure of the kids to Western media, Western TV.
Right.
And they were transfixed by what they saw was a late model UFO. I say that sarcastically because these are all just props.
A late model UFO.
Yeah, late model UFO. They drew pictures of the what they saw, basically the same thing.
Do you recall what it looked like?
Yeah, it was a flattened saucer with red lights around the rim, one big one, a bunch of small little saucers, and one or two very large, I'll call them aliens for lack of a better word, with big eyes. Some of the children described them as big as a rugby ball. And a little alien jumping back and forth like he was moon bouncing. Kinds of things that have been described by other abductees.
How many of these children related, in essence, the same story?
All of them.
All of them?
Every single one were asked to sketch. The ones who were interviewed, I'm sorry, not all of them, because not all of them were interviewed. About a handful, about two dozen were interviewed.
That's a lot.
Yeah. They all sketched the same thing, and what they said was very interesting. They were kind of lined up, transfixed. They were afraid at one point, but they were kind of drawn into the eyes, particularly the big guy with the big rugby eyes. And telepathically, I say that, they heard in their head the words and the idea. Many of them said they didn't hear any words. It was just the idea that your Earth is dying. You need to take care of your Earth. And that mankind is doomed unless you take care of the planet. That's all. And all the scene evaporated. Okay? Because they're all props. You've heard me talk about this before.
Oh, I have, yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, all right. So I think that you and I would agree that there is an intelligence behind that event, that incident. We have innocent children.
Yeah, sure. Sounds
okay.
Like it, yes.
There's an intelligence behind that incident. Would you agree with that?
Yes. I mean, if it is as so. Now,
you've
got to understand, I haven't heard about this before.
It's very well documented, by the way, Art, so I can send you the references. And but you know what I might do is put them on either my website, or people go to learnrv.com, that website, I can link them there. But I'll send them to you later.
I mean, if it is as you described, then obviously, sure. It was there's some master intelligence behind that, of course.
Now, would you call that or it a higher intelligence?
Well, I guess that's subjective. I mean, you know, there's plenty of people who would say that's some kind of leftist tree hugging garbage he's spewing.
No, you are. If you knew, if Professor Mack related that to you,
it'd scare the, you know what, out of me.
But the children were all left with the same idea.
Oh, listen, you're preaching to the choir here. If all those children had that message and received it telepathically, and I knew that to be true, it would scare the hell out of me. Of course.
If, let's say, it were true, that the message were true, and that would mean that whatever this intelligence was, it knows more about the planet than we do.
Yeah.
I call that a higher intelligence. At any rate,
yeah.
You know, since I hire them and I fire them, I decided to use this as a case study. I wanted to know much more about the agency, the intelligent agency, and folks, listen to me carefully. I did not say intelligence agency. I said the intelligent agency behind that incident. When expert remote viewers attack that problem, when we look at what went down, and I'll use just the vernacular now rather than to get into technical terms, there's nothing there. There was nothing at the children except some type of an energy source. That's all. So everything that the children said they saw were props. It was played into their mind like it was... Think of an implant instead of a physical implant. You have an idea that's projected into your mind
mm-hmm.
that makes you see these things.
Yes.
So we have a pretty advanced technology out there. Let's use the term technology for lack of a better word. What the heck, right? So we have an advanced technology that can project this image into a bunch of transfixed children and with the idea that your Earth is dying and you better take care of it.
You know, Ed, let me stop you here. If what you're saying is true, and there would be tapes, you know, documenting the interviews with the children as you've talked about, that would be, I don't know, that would be, I would think, hard scientific evidence that would be hitting the headlines. And I haven't read that.
It is a very significant event in the annals of ufology, and particularly in the area of abductions. And Professor Mack just happened to be there in Africa.
Yeah, I vaguely actually do remember something about this. I don't remember hearing it in the kind of detail you're relating tonight with that message and so forth and so on, but I kind of remember that Mack did run in, the professor did run into something in Africa.
Well, he has so much that he's done in his career, but he was leading an international abduction project.
Yeah, but God, this would stop you cold. I mean, you're talking about 60 children, even if it's just two dozen who have all the same memory of an injected thought that is so dire, it just seems like it would be monstrous headlines. You know, where's the press on this?
Oh, come on, Art. If you know, you could have a crop circle in the sand out in front of, in back of your house, a sand circle, and nobody would care. We're dealing with this science. Yeah, right, science. That's Professor Mack was trying to tell us something, that these abduction experiences are real. It's a real objective phenomenon that may not ever be understood subjectively, but it's a conduit towards other realities, and that in and of itself is important.
Oh, sure.
In and of itself is important. I think he's dead on. I believe that without access to these higher realities, to something else, that even if we do reconstruct this planet after the kill shot and the pole shift, we're going to do the same thing over again. We need connection with the system, I believe. I have more to say about this. It's quite revolutionary, and I've never mentioned it on your show before. And it deals with this new capability that my team has in terms of location. Okay?
Okay.
I want to have a tete-a-tete with this particular higher intelligence, because we have chain of custody now, rather than looking at all the abduction phenomena in toto. Let's look at just this event and connect the dots.
Okay, Ed, you said that one of the reasons that it wasn't more widespread and in more hands was because you mentioned something about the parents not allowing their child's image or testimony to be used in some way. Is that correct?
Correct. Correct. Professor Mack really wanted to distribute this 35-millimeter video, and it wasn't to make money. It was to show the world that there's something really important went down here. But the parents, you can understand, you want to protect your child from the press, from the National Enquirer types, and so
yes.
that's what they wanted to do. That's why they did not allow promulgation of the tape. But I got to see it in its raw form.
And, okay, well, since you've seen it, how impressed were you with the consistency, with the controls they used in the interviewing, all of it?
Well, I was extremely impressed. But the first time I got to see Professor Mack, albeit in a video interview, he was there with me at the conference. We were joint speakers. But I never got to see him interview subjects. And he, as well as the parents, were standing next to him. So, and there was no leading on. Each child was brought in independent of the others and asked what happened, not what they saw, what happened.
Out. Yes.
And all the children described the same thing.
But, I mean, that's a total bombshell.
Well, there's many bombshells in this ufology world that you and I are so enamored of. Many bombshells, but this one was important because it of the message there. I thought the message represented somebody that cared and somebody that is a higher intelligence.
Well, it's more like a bunker buster. I mean, to say, you know, if you're dealing with a statement confirmed in the way you're talking about that, you know, repeat it. The exact message was?
Well, to paraphrase the children en masse, it was, your planet is dying, mankind is doomed, because you're not taking care of the planet. To me, that's not a warning announcement. That's a requiem. That's a requiem theme. Now, Art, what do you do with something like that? Even in the military, when in the intelligence business, when we had enigmatic situations happen, you just stick it in the file drawer somewhere. What do you do with it? You don't do anything because you can't track it, but remote viewers can. Remote viewers can look at that event and then connect the dots. We can establish connectivity to what the cause and the origin of what produced that event. Who made the props? Where are they now? Is it a they or an it or a what? That's what we did as an expert team. That led us to something very interesting. I would like to contact this agency. That contact for me, a la Project Starman, means connecting with this particular agency. A lot of work, years of work, of at least 4 or 5 years, went into trying to track down a way of connecting proactively, but on their terms with them. Now, it looked as if, for a while, there was an artifact, a key artifact somewhere on planet Earth, think along the lines of the monolith in 2001 Space Odyssey,
right.
That idea. It looked like there's something like that on the planet that was connected with them, but that's not true. That was wrong. What there really is, and what surprised me to the max, is this. There really is a Stargate. Not exactly like the one in the movie, not like the one in the television series, but there really is a portal. It exists on Earth, and the only way to find it, and you can walk right by it and never know it's there, the only way to find it is using these higher consciousness tools, remote viewing. We have to approach this particular agency with a higher intelligence.
So you're saying there's a stargate, and you're also now, I guess, telling me that your new ability to identify virtually down to the ability of our satellites orbiting GPS down to that scale would allow you to find this stargate.
To walk right up to it.
Right up to it.
And it has gatekeepers, by the way, but they hit the bottom line here. The bottom line postulate is this. We think that if we've developed the capacity to become aware of such a thing and to understand what it is and to locate it and then to present ourselves there, then we've met the Federation or the system's evolutionary criteria or their threshold value for contact.
Mm-hmm.
We've demonstrated warp drive.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we believe. And that is why I think that this, I think that in so doing, whatever comes out of that, and God only knows what it is, I don't think we can even understand what we'll be dealing with at this juncture right now. But I do believe that entry level into a Federation for our children and grandchildren is a worthwhile goal. And that quest is very, very important towards lifting ourselves up. If we have greater realities, as John Mack suggested, that might be the case. It's a humbling experience, and yet it's a growth experience for us evolutionarily.
So then this contact is Starman. It is the project.
It is. And to define it and to nail down what we're dealing with, that's the storyline from that particular event to what projected the event, to who and what they are, and to how contact is achieved. That's what it is. And that's why that this Project Starman is so important to me, and that's what I will be using most of my resources for instead of looking at the next terrorist
attack. Well, Ed, would contact in some way, are you guessing that in some way contact would mitigate what we face?
No. I think that, as an intelligence officer and as a remote viewer, years ago, even the military team and I saw that after the ozone layer fails, after all this stuff goes down, when we begin to rebuild with fewer people, when the survivors of all this begin to rebuild, there is another race here with us, an extraterrestrial race, a humanoid race, after the dust clears. I think that it makes sense to establish contact with this collective now and to begin to understand who our survivors will be shipmates with in the out years.
I think that
makes sense.
You believe these children were in contact with that same unknown intelligence?
Yes. What I believe is that they were in contact with intermediaries. I think that the system that they were in contact with is an intermediate system, and we know something about them, but that they essentially are the gatekeepers and the caretakers for this, let's call it a stargate.
Huh.
It's a portal. It really works. I mean, it really is a real thing. You can walk right by it, though. It's like an invisible TARDIS. Think of it that way. You just have to know where it may not be the only one on the planet either, but...
But, again, nothing's going to mitigate what's coming, contact or not, as far as you know.
I don't know that.
Oh, you don't know that?
No, maybe, I mean, pie in the sky.
Yeah.
You know, if I were to walk through something like that or be beamed up or whatever the heck happens and had the opportunity to say anything, it would be help.
Yeah.
Period. Just help. So who knows?
Huh. So is it your intent to locate and then walk through this stargate?
My intent to present myself there. I don't know. I think walk through is probably a misnomer. I don't think that kind of technology operates that way. I think just presenting presenting oneself. What I was going to do is just borrow one of your cats and kind of push it through. And if it doesn't come out, I'm going to run like hell.
You leave my cats alone. My cats!
You...
Nah, he wouldn't do that. I wouldn't let him do that. He can stick his foot through there or something. Slip his hand through there, but he's not slipping one of my cats through. Not my cats! Good morning, everybody. I told you it was going to be rough. From the high desert in the middle of the night, which is where we do all our business, this is Coast to Coast AM.
Up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memory stored, and use them to help us to find.
Want to take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Well, we are going to allow questions of Major Ed Dames this hour. Now, listen to me. There's only two things I wish you would abide by, please. One is, if you want to be in very much disagreement with Ed Dames on something, fine. Just please be polite. You can do that and make your point, believe me. And number two, for God's sakes, if you get through, turn off your radio right away. That's number one. So with those simple things in mind, it's off to the phones shortly. Once again, Major Ed Dames. Well, you've told us an awful lot tonight, Ed.
I told you what I do. This is, by the way, my primary role, at least half of what I do, I'm an educator. So I'd like to make an administrative announcement, if I may.
An administrative announcement?
Yeah.
Okay.
It took me about a year to put together this this set of DVDs, this comprehensive remote viewing course, and we're finally shipping that this week. So I wanted to mention that to your listeners.
What does it take to get it?
It takes either going to learnrv.com or to call a toll-free number, and that's all it takes.
This is actually known as a commercial plug, but
yeah.
That's fine. That's fine. So, what's the number?
The number is 866-607-8439.
607-8439.
Yeah.
And what exactly is it that you have and how much is it?
It's many hours of remote viewing instruction, very comprehensive, cutting-edge stuff. It's a set of four DVDs and a very detailed written companion guide. The entire set is $249.80, or the DVDs may be purchased separately at $79.95 along with the manual.
DVDs are $79.95?
$79.95, and the comprehensive companion guide comes with those.
And then so for the $249 versus the $79?
It's a better deal. But for people who just want to see if remote viewing is for them and they like it, it's a good idea to buy the first DVD.
You know, I there is something to remote viewing, folks. There really is. I absolutely believe that. But remote viewing is not for everybody. That I also believe, because it's not for me. Ed, I wouldn't want to know the things you've talked about tonight for sure. I wouldn't want to know.
It also changes you. It's difficult once you learn this, even through a basic course. And by the way, those of you who want to go through a classroom instruction, my next workshop is in Los Angeles, November 13th and 14th. And you can go to remoteviewing2004.com to check on that course or call the same number.
Okay.
It does change. You know that you can potentially know anything. So just that information alone changes your perspective on life.
You know, it's funny. Here on the first, I've got hundreds of messages here, but just on one chosen page of messages, I see one that says from Arlene in Felton, California, I saw a report of the children in Africa on TV many years ago. It's just like Ed said. Mike in Norfolk, Virginia says, Major Ed Hogwash? Question mark. And, you know, and so forth. It's exactly what I told you at the beginning of the program. There's no in-between here, Ed. Either they're with you or they hate your guts.
Well, I'm pointing out chain of custody here. What I did, what influenced me was Professor Mack's report. And he was not the only one there to investigate that. So it isn't just his interviews that I'm referring to.
Yeah, well, it hit me pretty hard, too. All right. That number, again, is 1-866-607-8439, right?
Correct.
Okay, good. Let's see how we do here. I'm very curious. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi there. I just have two questions for you really quickly here.
Okay, go ahead. Wait a minute. Where are you?
I'm from Edmonton, Alberta.
And what's your first name?
My name is Mike.
Okay, Mike. Fire away.
Are you the same gentleman who was associated with someone named Paul Smith in the 80s, starting in the 80s?
I couldn't hear the conjunction between gentleman and Paul Smith.
Were you the same gentleman associated with Paul Smith in the early 90s?
Paul Smith was one of the remote viewers on my team and at DIA, yes.
Okay, and I found a PDF document online called the Remote Viewing Manual, dated May 1st, 1986. Is this the basis for your program as well?
That was the coordinate remote viewing system that the father of remote viewing, Ingo Swann, discovered, and that became our standard operating procedure at the military PSI spy unit.
Is that a valid manual now, Ed?
It's. Let's see. How would I equate that to? It's sort of like the principles of flight as opposed to flying an F-111 or an F-117.
Nevertheless, it's historical and apparently accurate, caller.
Yes, it is.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Take care. So that would be the early sort of charter document for remote viewing, is that?
Yes, it was essentially Ingo's fundamental discovery. And, you know, every unit has to have an SOP, a standard operating procedure. So that had to be written. Paul Smith took a lot of time to interview Ingo and make sure that he got it right when he wrote that for the unit. That was his job, to write the SOP.
So this is a free PDF document somewhere on the web?
Yeah, you can get it on the web in several different places, too. Now, the remote viewing has evolved greatly since then. For instance, that comprehensive DVD that I was just talking about, that I market is 21 years of evolution from that point. So you can imagine how much more evolved it's been in 21 years.
Yeah, it's been going for a long time. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. Great show, and I'll be looking forward to the ABC presentation. A couple of questions for Ed. specifically earthquake forecasts and the possibility of what people should do with the stock market. In California here, the 1857 event on the San Andreas was preceded by an earthquake at Parkfield. We know that from geological evidence. Do you have any remote viewing of any possibility of a large quake in California or anywhere else in the country?
No,
and also, what would
Japan.
You do with stocks? Thank you.
All right. Earthquakes, and he also asked about stocks. Everybody always wants to know about the market.
Yeah, no, I don't. I don't have any information vis-a-vis the stock market. And in fact, in light of what?
Well, really, you do. I mean, worldwide economic collapse would qualify.
Well, okay, 2005. But in terms of earthquakes, the only work we've done, precision work as a team, has been on behalf for Asahi TV last year. They were very. I did a program for Japanese TV. And they wanted to know when X Day, what they called X Day, was a big earthquake in Tokyo, and so my team spent a lot of time looking at predicting earthquakes in Tokyo and what kind of damage it would be. And it looks like late 2005, they do get some rather large quakes, and that the consequences of that, the major consequence, is the Manju breeder reactor breaking. In Japan. Now, the Japanese TV did not want to tell their viewers about that because we're talking about a mini Chernobyl.
So you mean you said it, they taped it, but they didn't air it?
Correct. Correct. I'm telling you that now.
Yes, that's very important. Interesting. That's really interesting.
Well, you know, think about the consequences.
I can't let you get away tonight without at least asking you on behalf of all my Northwest friends about Mount St. Helens. It's gurgling and popping and spewing and earthquaking and looking very unstable. Anything to tell the people up there by St. Helens?
No, we'd have to actually target the effects of that eruption.
How
about let's say it's going to erupt. What we would do is focus on the effects in terms of everything, atmosphere,
yeah.
Loss of...
Yeah,
loss
no,
of-
I do. I understand how remote viewing works. A lot of the American public, Ed, thinks that it's, you know, like I'm talking or interviewing a psychic right now. I'm not. That's not what remote viewing is. For those of you who are thinking, well, why can't he tell us? He can if we assign him this task or he takes it on. Then the next time he could come on and tell us about Mount St. Helens. Can we plead for that to be put on the list?
You got it. Yeah, of course it may be maybe history by then.
It may.
But yes, we can take a look at that too.
Okay.
I'm not going to put too many things on my docket because of the two projects I told you about.
Yeah, you're over your head already. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Thanks for taking my call. This
sure.
is Marnie in Kansas.
Yes.
And I just wanted to confirm what Major Dames was talking about. I saw a portion of that interview on a program on mainstream TV, Unexplained Mysteries, and it was phenomenal.
You're talking about the children?
Yes. These children were articulate. The drawings were great. And the teacher was on there, too, and she told how they interviewed these children separately, children from all walks of life, you know, different races even, and it was great.
Well, to me, just hearing this gives me the heebie-jeebies.
And I do believe there was an older gentleman on there. I don't know who he was. And I had one question. Major Dames, what do you see for the central part of the United States in the future?
Gee, everybody wants to know about home. What a
surprise. Do you
have
a boat? No, just kidding. I have not focused upon that. The only thing, and I mentioned this in the Killshot DVD the details, that safe zones, the only things that we do know that are safe zones are a belt from about, that centered around 45, 50 degrees, where a number of crop circles have been across North America and all the way into Eastern Europe, across the UK.
You believe crop circles to be a marker of safety zone?
Yes. Yeah, that doesn't mean life's going to be halcyon, but it means that the way the Earth ends up tilting and other factors, apparently those are safe zones, and that's what most of the crop circles are. the meaning is in the place. There is
well,
the
then
meaning.
If I did have a dust circle in my yard, that could be good.
That could be very good too. But I want to just point out one other thing too.
Yeah, yes.
That the lives of these children that have been touched by this particular incident in Africa and Zimbabwe. Think about that for a moment. Those children, I mean, they're going to grow up with an idea, and it's not going to go away, about the earth and protecting it. That is not going to go away.
I'm
so that
sure.
One thing that has happened is those children were certainly influenced at a deep, very deep psychic level with that message.
I'm sure that's right. And it will be interesting to follow the lives of these children.
They're beautiful children. Beautiful. You should see them. I mean, multiracial, multicultural. The school was a multinational school. Very, very, very highly educated and not exposed to contemporary Western media.
Your planet is dying. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Morning, Art.
Hi.
Hope your back's doing good.
It's rumbling along. Sir, where are you?
I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, KFYI.
Okay.
The thing that Ed was... morning to you, too, Ed.
Morning.
When Ed was talking earlier about what the children had kind of heard without actually hearing, and the fact that there were UFOs involved, just it made the... I got goosebumps on my arms when he said that.
I hear you. He also said that those were props, if you were listening really carefully.
I didn't quite understand what the prop thing was.
Good, Ed. Explain that, please.
They're simply projections. They were either temporary out there, but what was happening literally to these children is their brains were being electrically manipulated. They were being manipulated to believe that they were looking at something that was objective, and in reality it wasn't. All that was out there was sort of an energy presence.
Do you think that was it was just projected so that they would buy into the fact that something incredible was happening?
It wasn't simply that they would buy into it. Remember, you're listening to it now, secondhand, thirdhand, fourthhand.
Yes.
The message is being promulgated too. And that's what this system has been doing for a long time, this so-called abduction system. Look, let's hark back to your friend, Whitley Strieber, original book Communion.
Oh, yes.
And by the way, he said, he in the book, to paraphrase him, he thinks that in order to understand what he calls the visitors, it's going to take the intellectual rigor of the scientist and the insight of the mystic or something like that. Yeah, that's called remote viewing. But Whitley Strieber said, when he was catatonic, you have no right to do this to me. And
I
said, remember?
Yes.
We
yes.
Do.
Oh, sure, of course.
We do.
No, I've been Whitley's friend for a long time, and I can tell you, man, privately, he's no different than he is publicly. Whatever happened to Whitley, something really happened. That man was sincerely, absolutely traumatized by what happened to him.
Well, if something comes back and says to you, we do, our logic, our paradigm says they either have to be caretakers, guardians, or maybe progenitors. But,
yes.
You know, that's a higher intelligence.
Anything else, caller?
Yeah. I wanted to mention what happened to me that was similar. And this was on the morning of 911 at about 6 o'clock Mountain Time in Phoenix. It was really strange. I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and my answering machine was going off, and it sounded like an AT&T multiple voice mixture.
Yes.
It was a female, and she was saying similar things that, you know, someone's trying to contact you, the world is in needs help, and it was basically stating that it was wanting me to wise up, and it was really strange. I went back to bed, and my girlfriend came over at about 6:30 or 6:45, just before my alarm went off. And she woke me up, and I jumped out of bed screaming. I was terrified. Oh, but the other thing I missed was when I thought someone was on my phone, I walked out into the kitchen, and I have never sleepwalked. I walked out into the kitchen thinking that someone had just left a strange message on my phone, and the message light was not blinking. I played the message. There was nothing on it.
Yeah, I've got okay. I've got the idea, sir. Now he had, in other words, he had a thought laid into his brain, much the way those children did. Do you think, Ed, that this is a frequent occurrence, or more frequent than we imagine, that people, on the earth right now are getting these messages and probably not talking about it? I mean, you know, if you go out in public and say, look, I just, you know, I heard from aliens in my head or God in my head, you're not going to get a lot of action.
I don't know.
Of the kind you'll like.
Yeah, all I know is the popular, the ones that have made it, one Raymond Fowler's interview, Betty Andreessen.
Yes.
And books like that, and Communion, Whitley's book, original book. But when this agency talks, when the abductees, let's call them that for lack of a better term, say that whether or not they're being gynecologically probed or whatever, it's interesting to listen to what the so-called bug-eyed props say, and they are props. They're not real. There's really no grays that look like that. Those are all disguises. I'll talk to you about the real form, if you'd like. To Betty Andreessen, they say, when she says, why are you doing this to me? They say, we're looking for the light. The light is going out in man.
Huh.
And doors have been left open. Well, I thought that was like the Hopi idea of the whole hole on top of your head. Don't let it close, because that's the spiritual contact. But it may be literal. That may be the Stargate that I've been referring to.
Maybe.
But I think it is good. I think it has, at some levels, John Mack, I'm sure he would agree with me if he were still around, or he'd still agree with me now, that it's quite widespread.
John Mack was a scientist. That I would agree with. If he really did those interviews and got those results, then that will stand the hair on the back of my neck up.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It absolutely is, and one thing's for darn sure, what you're hearing in these dark hours has no relationship whatsoever, or so little, it's not even funny, to anything you'll ever hear during the daytime in any media. That would be right here. You know, I wonder, Ed, do you regret the fact that you were long ago dubbed Dr. Doom?
No, the names don't matter to me. It's one that people remember. It's although That's my nom de guerre. I told you why I got that in the White House. Other officers would come and brief on megaton engine throw weights. I, as a biologic warfare case officer, specialist for the Army, would brief on very excruciating ways that other countries were deciding on how they wanted to kill us. So,
mm-hmm. Well, there's been no shortage of those recently, huh?
No.
Ed, do you have anything at all on the current war on terror? I'm forced to ask again. I mean, I've really got to. And if not, then can you add it to the list? I mean, the American people right now, I mean, look at the debate, so-called, that we just had. They spent half their time on Iraq and the war on terror, and it is in our minds. And so,
well, I'm concerned about domestic terrorism. I think I mean, you've still got the Timothy McVeighs out there, but in terms of foreign terrorism,
yes.
By the way, you folks who have learned remote viewing or thinking about this as a vocation, make sure that you differentiate when you use the term terrorism between foreign and domestic.
Uh-huh.
But it's so difficult to get, it really is difficult to get high explosives and other things into the country. So what you're going to see in our country is assassinations. You're going to see a bullet, and a takedown of people that matter. That you will see more than the high explosives.
Okay, here we go again. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Good morning, Art and Ed.
Yes, sir. Good morning. Where are you?
This is George in St. Petersburg, Florida. I'm one of those many in support of Major Dames, having had the privilege of attending his remote viewing classes. How are you doing, Ed?
I'm doing fine. Hello, George. Are you
I
wet?
I just had a question sitting here on my little artificial island watching Earth changes come whipping by here in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wondering on your ultimate life path that you usually task people, are you still getting the same responses of people being underground? Because I'm getting ready to dig in, especially if this continues.
What George is referring to is the years ago where we started to look at what the heck is going on way out there, what we call the discontinuity up ahead, is many, many people who are looking at the, at a particular attempting to optimize their personal pathways. This is businesses as well as individuals. A point was reached where the optimum appeared to be themselves underground. That's when we began to look at why that was the case. So the answer is still yes.
So, caller, you viewed this. You remote viewed this, the need to be underground. You did that?
Well, actually, it was interesting because when Ed gives this as a blind task, in other words, he doesn't tell you what the question is going to be. And my drawing basically showed a kind of an orbit, much like a planet, Saturn being the a ring or an orbit, and I saw a break, as if that there was an event that happened, and I had myself in an artificial structure that would have been probably underground, and it was rather mm-hmm. interesting. And when I heard Ed mention on your show that this is often what people are answering, it certainly makes one wonder.
Yes. Indeed. Did you a lot of good? Are you glad you took the course and did it?
Well, I want to personally thank you, but it was only because of your show that I attended. And I tell you one thing, it blew me away. I was just amazed. I can't express it anymore. It was just an amazing experience.
All right. Thank you very much, caller. And Ed, Suspect Zero, what's the status with the movie right now?
It's come and gone off of American screens, but it airs in Germany, I think, beginning next week. In fact, I'll be in Germany next week.
Really?
Yeah, I have a project there. And so I guess I'll see it again with some friends in Germany.
Do you ever do foreign interviews? Do you do interviews, for example, the German press?
Yes, many times. I do documentaries in Japan. Many times, I live in the Hawaiian Islands, so oftentimes I make them come to me, and that's tough for them, a tough tough for people to come to paradise, right? So the Germans, the Brits, the Japanese have been here recently.
I'm sure the Germans are just heartbroken when they're told they have to go to Hawaii. Just
right.
Absolutely
right.
Heartbroken. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi. Good morning, Art and Major Dames. First of all, Major Dames, I want to let you know that intuitively I respect your integrity. So, and according to you, after the kill shot event, the population of the planet will be reduced significantly. What do you believe will be the determining factors, other than location, for who survives and who doesn't?
We're talking Mad Max. So you're going to see the worst that you can see today. Picture Bosnia Herzegovina a few years ago. Picture Africa today. Picture Vlad the Impaler. Picture the worst of mankind. The worst. That's what you're going to see. So, you know, add that into the equation. You'll need to be in an area that would preferably be isolated and with groups of people that are like-minded.
You know, this sounds eerily to me like what was perhaps described generally as the third secret of Fatima, you know, by a number of clerics over the years. Father Malachi Martin. Yeah,
in
other words, as bad as you can imagine and worse than that.
Yes.
Do you believe, sir, that person's lifestyle as far as consciousness toward the planet, consciousness toward people will make a difference?
In terms of survival?
Yep.
Yeah. In other words, if one is living a life that is already being supportive of the planet and supportive of other people within the planet or on this planet, do you think that that will make a difference?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a man of faith. I'm, you know, big supporter of Jesus of Nazareth and prayer and all that. But I still like to have my back covered. I like to be in an area where there's a lot of fresh water. I don't like carrying weapons. So I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question.
So it may not depend on, it may not matter how you live.
It may not. I think it matters how, personally, I think it matters how you lived. Because this planet is a breeding ground for souls, and souls are being harvested from this planet continuously. It's a garden. The garden's going to lay fallow for a while, but
many have said that.
Yeah.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing tonight?
Just spiffy.
Hey, I got a question for Ed.
Okay.
Earlier in the show, he mentioned that Israel would take out Iran's nuclear weapons, and I was just kind of wondering if he could tell me possibly how this will happen, and if so, what would the consequences be for Israel?
I don't want a discourse on the consequences, because I would like to use it. It would be, for me, I would want to use my skills to look at consequences, and I prefer not to do that anyway. Basically, jet aircraft and bunker buster bombs. Soon.
In today's world, that's just not all that hard to believe.
Well, they've done it before in Iraq. So
yeah, that's absolutely right.
They've had practice.
And they're very proactive in their own defense.
And very proficient as well.
And proficient, yes. So it wouldn't surprise me. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Hello, yes. My name is Nancy. I'm in West Covina, California.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. And my question, first of all, I want to say it's a real thrill and a pleasure to talk to both of you.
Thank you.
And my question is, when Major Dames talks about the Starman or the Federation, I heard him use the word Federation, is he is that the equivalent of what Courtney Brown talks about in his book? I read a book of his a couple of years ago, and I can't remember the name of it.
It was called Cosmic Voyage. I made him take my name out of the book. I own part of that book because he pigeonholed his philosophy. He didn't remain objective. He did a good job as my student in terms of remote viewing, but he
but he took his good job and he drove the square peg into the round hole of his own ideas. And so there, analytically, he skewed the data. And that book was called Cosmic Voyage. Basically, yes, along those lines.
He spoke about the leader of this federation as being sort of...
No. No, that from that, there's just the idea of federation is the only thing that was correct. The rest of it was his own ego.
I see. Okay. And also, I wanted to say when the kill shot happens, will it even be worth it to try to survive it? I mean, if our souls are being harvested, and if there's a better place to go, will it?
That's a cop out. No.
Why?
That's a cop out. That's a cop out. If you, I mean, of faith for sure. If you're somebody that where faith means something to you.
Why is it a cop out? Why?
Well, because you jumped in ship. You jumped in ship where there's a chance to maybe help. If you can't help yourself, to help somebody else. And I'm sure that's meaningful to you. There's a whole bunch of Vietnamese orphans that are eternally grateful to Art Bell, and their whole lives have been changed forever because of one act. Now think of it that way. If you don't want to help yourself, then there's opportunities to help others.
How do you know about that?
I just do. My, you know.
International. Yes. International Line. You're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Good evening, Major Danes, and hello to you, Art.
You're going to have to yell at us. I can barely hear you.
Good evening. Good morning, Major Danes. Good morning, Art. It's a pleasure talking to you both. Now, I have two questions. First of all, whoever might have the means, I was thinking possible at extracting water from the reservoirs down by the Gulf there and dispensing it through the hurricanes. What is your feeling regarding that?
What now? Taking water out of the Gulf and dispensing it into hurricanes?
Extracting. I'm thinking there may be a reservoir down there for, like, possibly where maybe the president would go or whoever would have the need, and possibly dispensing it through the hurricanes, and maybe that is one reason why the hurricanes came one after another. What do you think about that?
All right. Yikes. I don't know. That one's pretty far out there.
I just can't comment on it.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
I can't relate to it.
However, it has been a horrific hurricane season.
Art, coming global superstorm. You said it, Whitley said it, and you guys are right. So, and I said it 7 years ago that the Earth's weather is going to change so rapidly in a logarithmic scale that we will not corporately be able to grow crops the same way that we've grown them in the past. Many people will starve as a result of that. And these storms are going to get bigger and bigger. There was one of your shows when I said, watch for the impossible, an F5 tornado, the mother of all tornadoes. That popped right up in Iowa.
Actually, the weather. I saw the Weather Channel the other day, Ed, and they said it actually wasn't an F5. They said the final measurement showed it to be only was it a four? No, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was a five. And oh, I remember, Ed. Yes, you're right. It's five. They said somebody said it was a six, or the rumor was out there that it had attained category six, which is supposed to be impossible.
Impossible, right? Well, but, so was the next 45 solar flare.
It did get to the very upper part of the scale of F5, so it got damn close, but it wasn't F5.
Yeah, but we know that. We see it happening, too. So it no longer takes an over-the-horizon radar remote viewer to say, hey, this is what's coming. Now it's here. It's here. We've been doing this show for 8 years that over-the-horizon event is now on the horizon. So everybody can see it.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hey, yes. Isn't it a friendly universe, or wouldn't it be like Mars Attacks?
What? What about Mars Attacks?
Isn't it a friendly universe, or wouldn't it be Mars Attacks?
It appears to be, actually, more than friendly. It appears to be, you know, what's more than friendly. It appears to be
more than
at a deeper level in terms of longer range time, more than friendly. In fact, think of it this way. If anybody's going to grow, growth-wise, evolutionarily, you're only as strong as your weakest link. So it's in the best interest of those folks out there who are not barbaric, who are evolved, for us to grow fast so they can move on as well.
Gotcha. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome.
Yes, thank you very much. I've been trying to get through to Ed Dames every time he's been on the show, so I'm very excited.
Well, this time you made it, but we're at the end of the show, so let's rock and roll.
Ed Dames, I just wanted to ask, there was a time traveler on the day before, and I'm just curious. He talked about world lines and his world line. Does remote viewing correspond with quantum physics, or is it strictly a reality basis kind of thing where it's just us?
I think there's a few, there's two non sequiturs there, and I won't get into dissecting your statement for the non sequiturs. I will say that this, and this is non sequitur too. We do not have a theory for why we can do what we can do. We don't have a theory. We have a working model. We have to have that in order to teach it,
right?
And we can teach in class. But we're going to have to leave it to the academicians and the theoreticians to come up with a working model. We have replicability. We can do the same thing every time. Trained remote viewers can do that. But we don't, and quantum theory actually supports the more and more so.
It sure does.
What we're able to do, global mind.
It absolutely does. It does. And in interview after interview, particularly in the last year, that's become increasingly apparent from actually the science side of the aisle, the metaphysical side of the aisle. Everybody is actually starting to almost get together on this. It's very interesting.
Many of my students are leading scientists, so they have no problem with it. It's just coming up with the theory that it's going to take a little while longer if we have that much time at all.
I know, but the whole quantum thing is the I don't know, the glue that binds perhaps both sides together. It makes what you say possible, explains what you're able to do. And for the scientists, it neatly answers a lot of questions for them, too. And then there's, on top of that, there's some real science that's been done to begin to prove the whole quantum thing. It's freaky stuff.
Well,
something
at the bottom of all that is consciousness, I think.
Two places at one time, Ed. Transmission at the speed of thought. and I say thought because there's apparently no speed limit to thought. It occurs across whatever distance you need instantaneously, correct?
I agree. At parsec distances, it's an instantaneous, and it's transluminal.
And according to science, all you need to have that occur is for the items in question to have been coexistent at some point, and then there's a connection that will always hold true. It's, you know, so in other words, this is one of the first times, isn't it, Ed, that the people on the metaphysical side and the people on the science side are
beginning
to
sit down together at the same table.
Yes, beginning to sit down together at the same
table. In fact, as you probably know, a year ago, for the first time, physicists wringing their hands and pulling their hair out finally had to ask philosophers to sit down with them.
Yes, that's right.
And discuss time. What is time?
Yes.
The nature of time.
Well, look, buddy. It's over. We're out of time. As always, you do incredible programs. We'll have you back. Ed, thank you and good night.
I'll see you in December.
Take care.
Aloha.
December. Oh, yes. December. Well, this has been something, hasn't it? How about a date tomorrow night? Same time, same station, and all that. From the high deserts, in the darkness, good night.